This is Brock and Saul.
Brock Heward and Marcus. Sorry about just Mike.
Presented by Carter, Volkswagen, and Ballard.
On Seattle Sports Station.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Where's like the buff dudes at?
Now here are your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Saul.
Put the fire!
Plenty of fire today, although I was accused of being a little too fiery yesterday, so I'm trying to tone it down today. Yeah, I was accused of being too fiery yesterday, so I'm trying to keep it, you know, chill. Okay. People said I was a little out of control, and I don't want that. I don't need people, backing off more. Kind of got after me a little bit yesterday, and then went over to this media lunch. And
you act like I'm always mean. I just asked if you were okay.
Well, that's a very leading way of suggesting it.
Tell me I'm being too much without telling me I'm being too much.
Right. So, you know,
I'm not Justin telling you everything you do is great.
Well, I need that. Wow. So I am, I try to listen to the people around me. So I went home yesterday after the event and, you know, after crying for at least a few hours, I finally was able to kind of think through the day through my tears and all of that. And, you know, I want to make change. I want to be better. I want to make sure that I'm, you know, not making people think I woke up on the wrong side of the bed.
Well, Brock was being a little hard on you yesterday.
He was making me feel my age. It was my wife's birthday. Right. Now we are entering the what I refer to as the beautiful 3 months where she's older than me, which is great. And this is where we really, you know, the trash talk really kind of heats up at home, because let's face it, she's now old and I'm not. And so that is, you know, a big thing in my life right now. So with all that being said, I went home last night, Brock.
And you did what you do best.
I thought that I would try to be very positive.
You wrote.
Since I was being given all kinds of grief yesterday, you're being too negative, you're being too chippy. Okay. All right. I get it. I'll go be positive. Uh-huh. So I gathered some thoughts, starting with what we had discussed yesterday regarding Trot Nixon. Mm-hmm. And by the way, when I started digging into the comp, it got better and better. So I write about this at seattlesports.com. And the major focus of this piece is that it's okay for the Mariners to have a hole in left field right now. There are good arguments against this, by the way. And I saw Mariner Muse and others are saying, you've lost me the second you even say it's okay. Okay. Read the column, and then if you disagree, that's totally fine. Do the Mariners have other holes? Yeah, probably. And maybe that's where you want to argue and poke holes in my theory. Right. I'll buy it.
Uh-oh. Hold on a sec. Maura, Justin, are you smelling what I'm smelling? Are you guys smelling what I'm smelling right now?
Bacon?
That Salk is going to write these articles, and then he's going to invite those to come in, and he's going to sit in there, and he's going to talk about his articles. He's going to have author time. Hey, Town Hall. I know you were listening the other day.
Yep.
I think Salk wants to kind of sit down and have
if anybody wants to pay $40 a piece to me to have me be a Town Hall Seattle, I'm all in. Trust me, that would be
well, good.
Great.
Well, let me raise my hand right now, then, sir, Mr. Salk, Mr. Writer Salk.
Yeah.
I take umbrage with one line in your.
What's
article.
The line?
Yeah. It is the line, and maybe you didn't say this, and maybe it's the headline. So maybe you're going to tell me, hey, I don't write the headlines. Brent writes the headlines.
True.
But I don't think so, because it's quoted in Seattle Sports tweet that they put out, which I read last night. And it said, this was a quote from the article, they are giving their mega talented young player the best chance he's had to succeed.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I can call Jared Kelnick after watching him for 2 years. Mega talented.
Oh, that's fair.
I can't do that, author. So and I challenge the premise. Is he physically gifted? Sure. And I was having this conversation on a walk yesterday with a friend of mine whose son was working out with Will Levis and doing some QB training. And we were chatting about Will Levis, and he said, "I said, wow, what'd your boy say?" He said, "Ooh, he could rip it. I mean, he can throw it." But is he a passer? There's a big difference. And then on our walk, we had a long distinction about throwers versus passers. Mm. And I think in this case, I would take a little bit of umbrage calling Jared mega talented.
All right, that's fair. I'll buy that. If that's what you want to take a little umbrage with, that might be an exaggeration.
Yeah.
He's certainly very talented. I mean, you know, there's a reason he was a top six pick in the draft.
He's at a buck 80 in this league. He's physically gifted. He's
right.
physically talented.
That's fine. Yeah, no, I'll
but as
buy
far
that.
As a baseball player being mega talented, I can't.
Okay.
I'll take that criticism,
and you might be right. But I do like the comp that we started yesterday, and as I started digging into it more, it actually started, and this came almost directly from the author that I saw the other night, Amor Towles, who was saying, like, when he starts doing research and things, it's amazing how often it just sort of, like, coincidences work out.
Mm-hmm.
And he had told some really great stories like that. So I had mentioned Trot Nixon as maybe being a comp. And so they are similar in a lot of ways. So Trot was picked number 7. I think he had a year of, like, independent ball. I think I said out of high school, but I think he actually had a year of independent ball. But he goes number 7 to the Red Sox in 93. Kelnick goes 6th to the Mets in 2018. So picked right around the same spot.
Mm-hmm.
Both left-handed, both incredible work ethic and really known for it. Both have all the physical tools and all the strength. And I think that's what I was trying to refer to, Brock.
Okay.
Both have families that push them incredibly hard and very demanding upon them. Kelnick is obviously that. Trot, the next year, you know who the Red Sox drafted at number 12 or something like that? Nomar Garciaparra, who reaches the big leagues before him, is an instant success, is the talk and the toast of Boston. People are going insane for Nomar, right? He's an all-star. He's better than Jeter.
Nomar.
It's like, right, it's Nomar. It's like the perfect fit in Boston at the time.
Yep.
He is the fan favorite along with Pedro Martinez.
Huh.
Meanwhile, Trot has a couple cups of coffee in 1996 and 1997, doesn't see the league or doesn't see the field in the big leagues in 1998. As Nomar is becoming a bigger and bigger star, a la Julio Rodriguez. And then in 1999, they did it right. Jimmy Williams did it right with Trot Nixon. He batted him 9th for almost the entire season, 372 of 447 appearances.
Wow.
Okay, there were a few at 8th and stuff, but for the most part, they bat him 9th all year long.
You went down the Trot Nixon rabbit hole.
Well, it was amazing how similar it was.
I love it, yes.
And then, by the way, with all of those 447 appearances, 50 of them total against lefties all year, and only 5 against left-handed starters. So you said, Brock, why are they being mean to Kelnick by giving him a platoon? They're not. They're helping him. They're putting him in the position he can best succeed. Now, Trot responded. He had an 830 OPS
to
that
you in
year.
This article? He responded.
He should have.
Sheesh.
We should get him on the horn here.
Yes.
Trot responded to that and had a great year and ended up having a very good, not quite great, but a very good career. He had a season with as high as a 5-win season, but, you know, he was a 2-3-win season guy. And
would you be satisfied if Jared Kelnick turned into Trot Nixon
right now,
in the next 8 years?
Yes. Right now, yes. A couple of years ago, I would have said I'm hoping for more. Right now? Yeah, Trot Nixon's a really good player who contributed to some great teams.
Yep.
Yes, I would be satisfied with it now. And if that's the way this goes, that would be great. Now, there's a lot of other, you know, tales that go the other way.
Yes.
Certainly Dustin Ackley, Jeremy Reed. I mean, there's plenty of them here in Seattle and across the league. So I'm not telling you that's a guarantee.
Well, we went through this exercise yesterday. I read your article twice. Thank you that you and I could discuss maybe one line that I took some umbrage with.
I appreciate
seemed
that.
To work that out.
I assume that means you agree with the rest of it.
I start to understand a lot more, right? I really do. I start to understand how this sport's a little different than other sports, and development's a little different in baseball. And it's a hard game, man. The longer my son plays it, the more I realize this is a hard, hard game to play.
Mm-hmm.
The most difficult game to play in professional sports in many ways, at least that hitting aspect of it. But listening to you, reading you, I think I feel very, very strongly. This is in Seattle. This is going to be his biggest and best last shot.
Yeah, it might be true.
That if they're going to go
about it, I think you and Moore are probably right about that.
If they're going to go to this length, right, and go about it this way and do everything and publicly, and you're going to hear Jerry in 15 minutes sing his praises as he did yesterday, and they're going to platoon him, and they're going to protect him, and they may hit him later in the line. They're going to do all of that.
Well, by the way, they may not have a choice. This might be his last option year. I'm not sure. I have to go check on that and see if I can get that information. He may not have options after this year. So this might literally be his last shot just based on the rules of baseball to try to figure it out. So, yeah, I don't know. I hope it works out for him.
Me too. I hope he trots out there with great confidence.
Thank you. I appreciate the pun. That's well said. I'll tell you what. We can ask Jerry DePoto about him and a whole bunch of other things as he joins us coming up in 20 minutes. Right after Everything You Need to Know next, it's Brock and Salk with old Pringle Fingers and her giant... What did this guy call them? somebody said that this is perfect because you're the Grinch of ranked. Why wouldn't you have Grinch fingers back there here on Seattle Sports on 710?
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Got over yesterday to the ballpark, was listening to Jerry DePoto and Justin Hollander speak, and you know, a lot of it we've heard before, and then all of a sudden my ears perked up because I heard exactly what I was hoping to.
I have deferred to Justin to provide the bubble wrap, and Luis is not going to pitch in the WBC. He's going to be in camp with us, and that is, it's something that we are pleased with, that he'll be there, and you know, it's a choice that we made together, and excited to see him from beginning to end.
Luis Castillo is not going to pitch in the WBC, and there couldn't be better news right now for the Mariners at this stage of the offseason. You know what the Mariners are built on? Pitching. You know what else they're built on? Pitching. You know what else they're built on? Pitching. And a little bit of defense thrown in. This is not going to be a huge offensive ball club or ballpark, and you heard Scott Servais talking about that yesterday, saying, look, we play games here. They're going to be close. They're going to be tight. They're going to be low scoring. And because of that, you're probably not going to see crazy offense. They're built around pitching and defense. And the guy they went after, the guy they put the real big resources into, the biggest trade Jerry DePoto's made to acquire a proven player in his tenure here in Seattle, was for Luis Castillo, an ace pitcher. So no, I don't want him pitching for the WBC. I want him pitching for the Seattle Mariners this year, and I'm pretty psyched about this.
Yeah, and furthermore, not only did they make that acquisition and give away those assets, they then extended
him. They doubled down.
So they gave him the resources, and they rewarded him for what he had earned. And let's also remember, he had a little shoulder deal early last year before that trade. He didn't make every single start before you traded for him. He made every start for you, and he made some remarkable starts, and he saved his best and biggest for the brightest stage in the playoffs. But a guy that had a little shoulder discomfort to start the season last year, do I want him pitching the WBC? Do I want him cranking up? Do I want him, and all the emotion that comes with that as you represent your national team? New. So that was very good.
He was not listed among the top 10 pitchers, starting pitchers in the game, and didn't even make the honorable mentions there. Now, I don't know if they do 15 minutes of honorable mention. Maybe they should, but he didn't make the list, which I think is ridiculous. Dillamore signs a 3-year deal for just under $9 million, so they'll avoid 2 years of arbitration there. It buys out 1 year of free agency, so good news for both sides there. And then the Mariners do win their arbitration case against Diego Castillo. Not that that was, you know, matters that
2.9 versus 3.2 million.
Yeah, but I mean, it wasn't a lot of money, but I told you that's how this works. Like, they each submit a number, and then the arbiter chooses between one or the other. In this case, they said the Mariners were more right on his value.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
So we've been kind of debating through this all morning long. ESPN did a really good job with an article yesterday, and Brady Henderson helped. He played the role of the Seahawks and said, all right, what do I give Geno Smith? I offer him a deal at 3 years, $90 million, 50 guaranteed. And in that scenario, Dan Graziano, playing the role of Geno Smith, said, yeah, I'll take it. I'm with Dan Graziano. I'd absolutely take it. But, Brock, I just couldn't make that offer from the Seahawks. And it doesn't have to be that much lower, but it'd be really hard for me to go over that $30 million mark. Not because Geno doesn't deserve it. He does. He's worth it. He's proven that somewhere in terms of what he's done at the position. But I don't see how you get better while paying him that much money.
It's 18 games. And some of those were truly remarkable. And in totality, the numbers don't lie. Salk, remember, men lie, women lie.
True.
Numbers don't lie.
Also true.
And those were 18 games. But it's 18 games worth $50 million.
To me, it has nothing to do with that. It's funny. You and I see that one a little bit differently. I'm not bothered by him doing it for 1 year. He did it. Did it in the NFL. Like, to me, those 18 games are meaningful, and it's not that I need to see two more seasons of it. To me, this is about the Seahawks roster in general more than it's about Geno Smith. How do you get better while paying the guy who you've already seen that much money? Yep. I just don't see how you write a script to do that.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
All right, Pro Bowl time. Tariq Woolen's going to play dodgeball. Geno Smith is going to be in the accuracy competition. Quandre Diggs, lightning round, and then Jason Myers, kick-tack-toe.
Right. What is lightning round?
I don't know. Yeah. Forget. Yeah. Maura, do you remember what lightning round is?
I have watched kick-tack-toe.
Yeah.
They put a big old tic-tac-toe, and you got to kick to the different boxes sure. and yeah, do your job. We watch the accuracy.
Your
and,
job.
And lightning round is where well. The players left from each conference will aim targets attached to a bucket hanging above the head of an opposing conference's coach.
There you go.
Yep. So it's a passing thing?
Like at the carnival. No, it's like you hit the target and it dumps. It's a dunk tank.
Right, but yep. you've got to throw a football,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, you got to throw something.
So Quandre Diggs is going to be throwing a football? Is that something he's going to be good at?
That doesn't sound great.
Seems surprising. I thought this was going to be some sort of a, like, Jeopardy-type competition. I thought he was going to be answering questions, which I was like, I think Quandre would be pretty good at that.
You see, I have asked for these. You're right. You know, this Pro Bowl has been a mess. It's people still watch, and it's remarkable they do, but thankfully they're not playing the game. They're not playing two-hand touch. They're actually playing flag football, which, yeah, I'll probably tune in. Not going to lie. Probably will tune in like many others. And I do like the long drive contest, and I do enjoy the accuracy contest. How about just a, like they used to do, how about just a sprint? How about just Herschel Walker versus Darryl Green? How about just Tariq Woolen versus...
Because those guys won't...
I know that they're
not going to risk their hamstrings
I
over
know,
that.
Oh, I guess.
That would be fun. We were watching some old stuff on NFL Network the other day, and they had this whole, like, quarterback obstacle course, and Carson Palmer's doing it.
Oh, yeah.
And he gets to the end, and he ate it. His feet went flying out from under him and just bang straight down on the field.
It's fun.
Pretty funny. All right, there you go. That's everything you need to know every hour, quarter past every hour here on the new Brock and Salk show. That's the funny part. I mean, when it's what's his name? John Stevens, though, and he blows out his Robert Edwards.
Robert Edwards.
And he blows out his knee playing
knee
beach room. Football. I mean, that's ruined his career, poor guy.
It's not what you're looking for. So does Jerry have anything left in the tank? Is he going to be all right? I mean, he's been talking, and Scott's been talking, mm-hmm. and Justin's been talking, Hollander, the whole crew yesterday. They were and good on the Mariners, man. Right time, right place, right? You take this week in between, you know, the NFL stuff. You're 2 weeks away from today,
right?
Pitchers and catchers.
Yeah, they owned it. They're owning this week a little bit. And it wasn't just the front office folks. Cal Raleigh was there. He and Justin are now best friends. They hung out and kind of... Yeah, they're bros.
True, it is.
Teoscar Hernandez was there.
Sharp.
A lot of talk from the Bump and Stacy show about how good looking he was and how nice he smelled.
Yes.
So I don't know exactly what's going on
Sauvage,
there.
Sauvage, the cologne.
He looks like he could play free safety, by the way. If you needed somebody to step in at safety, Teoscar looks like maybe he could handle that job.
Yep.
He's rocked. Not huge, not a big guy.
No.
But you could tell there's a lot of muscle.
Where's the buff dudes?
He's a pretty buff dude.
Right
there. I think you'll be looking at him when we're down at spring training. All right, well, Jerry hopefully still has something left for us. He'll join us coming up next. Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710 and the Seattle Sports app.
This is Brock and Salk.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines studio. Back in mornings from 6 to 10.
On Seattle Sports Station.
And we will be answering questions. A little return of answer, the question jerk, Brock, coming up in 30 minutes at 9 o'clock here on Brock and Salk. But right now, it's time for Jerry DePoto.
The Jerry DePoto Show, presented by Seattle Pump and Equipment on Seattle Sports Station.
Good morning, Jerry.
Morning, boys. How are we doing?
We're great. Busy day yesterday. It was nice to see you over there and just see everybody. It was exciting getting that whole group together and seeing how many people were out there at the press conference. There's clearly some buzz around this team right now.
You know, in addition to I guess, unveiling a new press room, and I was blown away with the volume. I feel like that was three or four times mm-hmm. the typical amount of media that pours out for our annual media press day. And I thought it was terrific. And the questions are great. And, you know, players, staff, I thought it was a fun day from beginning to end.
Yeah, news people there, right? It wasn't just the sports media. News media was there. You can see, and that's always a good thing when you start to cross over into the folks who are not, you know, spending every day thinking about this stuff like we are on this station or in this show. So I guess after, I should say, you know, you did the press conference, you went on Wyman and Bob, you were all over the place yesterday. Is there anything or anyone you haven't been asked about in the last 24 hours that you want to talk about?
But in addition to the presser last night, you know, we've done a couple of meals, you know, a dinner event last night, and there'll be another tomorrow. But it's just that week for us. You know, we used to reference this as Hell Week, you know, the week that myself, Scott, our players, everybody's going to go through the grind. And you know, it's changed a little bit over the years. But, you know, some of the things that we get to do, you know, the event I did last night, which I've now done, you know, 7 times in the last 8 years, the opportunity to sit, you know, on a stage and talk about our team and the things that excite us about this group. It's, you know, it's fun when you go back through time and you think about some of the conversations or some of the talking points that we threw out there in 2017 or 2019 and how far we've come as an organization. So, you know, maybe less about individual players, the way our offseason went or what we project for the season, and more about just, you know, sitting back and really taking it in how far we've come organizationally in recent years.
You know, I have said multiple times on this show and over the station, Jerry, that I don't think that we've ever dealt with a more transparent certainly president, GM. I mean, you tell us, you share with us the plan. You're a pretty open book in many ways, wanting, you know, people to learn and, you know, share from your perspective. Where did you learn that? Where did you decide, you know what, if I'm in this position of leadership as a president, as a general manager, I'm front facing for the organization, I'm going to be a pretty transparent, open book. I guess, where did you learn that, or whom did you learn that from?
You know, as we grow in whatever our life is, you know, whatever our work life looks like, you learn the good and the bad from the people that you're around through the years. And, you know, and for years and years as players, and Scott and I talked about this a lot as we were transitioning off the field and into, you know, the roles that we play today, that we, as players, all we ever talked about was, we just want people to talk to us like we're grown-ups, you know, to tell us the real story, what the expectations are of us, give us insights as to how we'll be used, what our jobs are. And most people in their walk of life have some form of job description. They know what it is. And, you know, and that's not necessarily true 30, 40 years ago for a professional baseball player. And I suspect that's true of professional athletics. So, mm-hmm. You know, it was an intentional, you know, development to try to do the things that we always said we found would be important. Be honest with our players, tell them the story, even if the story sometimes is what they don't want to hear. And, you know, and somewhere in there, I baked in the idea that, you know, when I was a kid, I was so interested in what was happening with my favorite teams. And, you know, if I'm not interested and I encounter someone who's willing to share with me what they're doing, you know, I feel like your interest, your curiosity, it just grows. And if that grows and your love of the game or your love of the team grows, then I did my job. And I'm thinking, you know, through the years that's what we want to be about is making, you know, our fans, making our players feel like they are part of what's happening in the control room as much as we possibly can.
So that's a perfect lead in to what I thought was the best news yesterday. And there was a bunch of good news yesterday. We can talk through Dylan Moore and, you know, Diego Castillo, et cetera. But the news that I nearly clapped at the press conference yesterday was that Luis Castillo is not going to be participating in the WBC. And you said that there was a conversation about that. So what is that conversation between the team and the player look like heading into that decision?
Yeah, you know, I like you, it didn't hurt my feelings. I've known about it for a little while. But, you know, when we acquired Luis and we immediately started the conversations about extending him, which you know, shortly after he came to Seattle, we were able to bring that to fruition. You know, this became part of our conversation. You know, as we get into the spring, you know, Luis has developed a knack in recent years for you know, shutting it down early in the off season. He starts his throwing program late. He comes into spring training and uses it as a ramp to get himself ready. And I've talked about it in very similar ways to Felix in his prime. You know, that was very much Felix's routine, something like that. And, you know, and we wanted to take every protective measure we could to make sure that we were prepared for whatever, you know, Luis's programs looked like. And when we started talking about this, one of our concerns was, if that's the practice and you've got to be ready to go, you know, shortly after Valentine's Day to go throw actual starts in competitive environments, we just wanted to make sure that we were, you know, in the right space. And, you know, through those discussions, it was, I think Luis viewed that once we invested long term in him as a part of the Mariners, I think the return on his part was just to invest in the next 5 years as a Seattle Mariner and, you know, and make sure that everything he was doing was geared toward taking us to the postseason and being ready to pitch there. And that's ultimately where we arrived, that he thought this was best for him. And we all thought it was best for the collective, he and the Mariners.
How about just his presence? How much do you want I was saying earlier, just your most talented, one of your most talented players in the whole organization. How about just his presence with your team? I mean, you did trade for him in July. This will be his first spring training as a Mariner, too. How big a deal will just him being available and being present for the rest of these pitchers and the rest of the ball club?
Yeah, I think it's awesome. Then he, for in many ways, flew under the radar, having played, you know, his major league career in Cincinnati and making his name there. Cincinnati is not a huge media market. It's not a team that's been, you know, on the postseason landscape in recent years. And, you know, as such, when we traded for him, I think people were kind of surprised or shocked at the level of pitcher that he was walking in the door. And, you know, we think he's a legitimate top of the rotation guy. He's got a presence to him, and you saw it in the biggest way in his very first outing. You know, in New York against the Yankees, that home start here against the Yankees, you saw it in his two playoff starts. He has that factor when he walks out to the mound. And I said it yesterday, you know, we didn't view our offseason goal as trying to close a 16-game gap with the Astros. We don't feel like we were a true 16-game separation away from them because our team changed so much while that was all happening. So, you know, broadly, yeah, we finished behind them by that amount. You know, more acutely, what we saw after Luis joined the team, second half George Kirby was considerably different than first half George Kirby. You know, June to September Julio was very different than April and May Julio. And then the same for Cal Raleigh, and the same, our team evolved. And, you know, and through all that, we didn't actually play the Astros very much in the second half, I think four times. So the hole we dug for ourselves, we dug before our team had truly evolved into the team that we ultimately became. And I think that's an important thing to remember as we look toward 23 is that young teams who are constantly growing, and we saw a bit of a greenhouse effect midseason, there's still opportunity for us to continue to grow because, you know, that's how our team is built.
Hey, Jerry, one of the guys you mentioned yesterday is Evan White, and he's not been talked about much. You mentioned yesterday that he's fully healthy for the first time since his rash of injuries started. What's a reasonable expectation for him? I mean, you know, we're probably guilty of not thinking about him as much as you guys do in the organization. So what should we be saying and thinking about Evan White right now?
You know, we're excited about where Evan's at. And obviously, you can look at the fact that we extended him to stay here, first round draft pick. He excelled in our system through AA. And we talked about some of the unfortunate development that occurred for a number of players with that 2020 season. I think Evan is among, you know, those who was probably most harmed. And, you know, right now our medical people, our trainers and strength coaches couldn't be more excited about where he is physically. I think that's true of Evan himself. He's had a really long couple of years with very real injuries. But this is an incredibly athletic player who I think, and I've said this before, is as good as any defensive first baseman I've ever laid an eye on. He's just as smooth, silky. There is no such thing as a bad hop with Evan at first base. And, you know, to have him back in a good place, he can swing the bat, he hits the ball hard, you know, and before, you know, going back down with another setback in September, his final month last year in Tacoma was just, you know, eye-opening. Like, this guy can still do a lot of really interesting things, and he's still a young player. So he'll come to spring training. You know, he needs ABs. He's missed a lot of plate appearances over the last 2 years, and you know, that what that looks like, he'll compete for a spot on the roster. The likelihood is we'll want him to gather up some at-bats in AAA and get back to some type of routine. But he's got the talent where you don't hold him back. There's really it's up to his health to determine the impact that he can have on our team. And we're still hopeful that that's a real thing.
Hey, Jerry, compare and contrast athletically Jared and Evan for me.
Jared's a strength athlete. You know, he is strong. He's got great body control and balance. And, you know, Evan is there. He's got a little of that ballet dancer in him. You know, he is the twitch. He's got some, they're explosive. Evan is explosive in a speed forward burst type of way. You know, Jared is explosive coming, you know, up from the earth, if that makes sense. Yeah. You know,
and you measure that, right? Don't you have those force? Don't you have the force boards or what have you that kind of measures that amount of force? Is Jared like off the charts in the organization? I know you talked about Munoz being a triple jumper and actually bringing so much force off of the ground. Are those two guys right near the top in the organization of that?
Yes, and actually, in almost all the things we measure, both Jared and Evan excel. You know, they are kind of chart toppers in that category. And you know, I'd say Evan does it with a unique degree of flexibility. You know, in addition to the strength and explosiveness, he's also incredibly flexible. And you know, that's a rare combination. You literally, if you naturally saw left-handers throw from shortstop, you'd say, it's probably a shortstop athlete. But it's, you know, he's a left-handed thrower, so it's more often that he's going to see first base, the corner outfields. And he's a tremendous athlete, and really looking forward to seeing what he comes into spring training looking like.
Been talking a lot about Kelnick here over the last few days, and I don't know, started working on a comp between him and Trot Nixon, which turned out to work in more ways than I thought it was going to in terms of their personality, some of their skill sets, strength, hard work ethic, et cetera, both drafted, I think, 6 and 7. And Trot, if you remember, kind of went through watching Nomar Garciaparra kind of cruise past him after being drafted the following year by the Red Sox. And it finally took him at age 25. I know Kelnick's only 23, where they said, okay, we're going to put you in the best position to succeed. We're going to only hit you against righties. You're going to hit ninth all year long. We're going to take all the pressure off you. And obviously he went on to a very good, solid career. Is that part of what the plan is right now with Kelnick, to kind of give him his, I don't want to say necessarily last, but maybe last best chance to try to figure it out here in Seattle?
Yeah, I did. And like you, and you hit on it when you said he's 23, there's, you know, I'm loath to say last chance, but this is his best chance, you know. And last year, and I don't know if we did the best we could do to set Jared up for success a year ago, where, you know, there wasn't a lot of net to catch him if he struggled. And the expectation was, all right, he's been through his struggle in 21, and this is a new year, new Jared, will be good. And you know, obviously it was a struggle for him again, and we had to make a change there. And, you know, this year, how we tried to put him in a better position is to go build a group around him that allowed him the opportunity to take an 0-for-8 over a couple of days stretch, and without sinking into that same long-term struggle by having guys like AJ Pollock on your club. And you know, that it really does offset some of the threat, because so much of the struggle that Jared has had is often caused by running into a couple of tough lefties, and then he puts some pressure on himself and it escalates. But he is, I know we spent a lot of our day talking about it yesterday. He is incredibly talented. He's still incredibly young. He has conquered every level to this point other than the major leagues. And, you know, for us not to continue to give him the reps and allow what he does on a baseball field to break through in the big leagues, he could be a difference-making player not just for us in 23, but over the course of the next, you know, who knows how many years. He's 23 years old. And that's that is an enticing thing that we just can't walk past because the talent's just too great.
Excuse me, I should probably know this, but if you send him down at any point this year, will that then be his last option year?
He has one option left. Okay. One option.
So in theory, though, if he's sent down at some point this year, the following year would be really his last chance to stick in the big leagues with the Mariners.
Correct. Okay. You know, that's when you start the carousel of guys going up and down or DFAs when they continue to struggle. But, you know, for right now, we're in a very good place with Jared where I think we have a wonderful opportunity for him at the big league level. We built a team that I think, you know, features him in the way that he should be featured right now in his career. And we're also in a position with some depth in young left-hand hitters that he's not flying alone. He has help from Taylor Trammell, from Cade Marlowe. And, you know, there's been a lot of pressure on Jared over these last couple of years. And to relieve some of that, I think, is going to go a long way, in addition to the wonderful work we think he's done this offseason.
You know, one area I think where Seattle sports fans, I hope they don't take it for granted, I don't think they do, is to have two organizations like you and the Seahawks across the street have the kind of continuity you have. You mentioned your years back with Scott, and all the way back to when you were players, and you guys have been kind of at the hip together for so long. Same with John and Pete, and both of you guys, organizationally, I think, love to learn your learners. That's what Pete Carroll calls it. We got to learn our learners, our new people, our new acquisitions. You had a chance yesterday to learn a little bit more about Teoscar Hernandez, right? It was our first opportunity to see him live and in person and connect with him, and he was with you guys all day. What did you learn about your new acquisition in right field?
First thing I learned was incredibly articulate. You know, he can really put words together, and he's easy to spend time with. He came up to the office and spent a little time with us before we went downstairs, which, you know, I thought was a mature thing to do. You don't usually see that where guys, you know, check in and pop into the office, which I found it refreshing. And, you know, and this is a positive development in that when we first acquired Teoscar and called him on the phone, he could not have been any more warm and inviting. And, you know, this is a guy who spent, you know, some formative years with the Blue Jays, a good team, playing with a lot of players that he knows well and likes spending time with. And, you know, and having been traded a couple times in my career, I know that there's a sting that's associated with that, but you'd never know it. And you know, yesterday I asked him, you know, who have you been in communication with from our team? And he rattled off a list of about a dozen guys. And I thought it was terrific that the things that we do, first of all, you know, kudos to our guys for reaching out and connecting with Teoscar and welcoming him to the group. But he will fit right in, and that to him, it's a community. And I think that really shone through in his comments yesterday. It's about building something special in the relationships you have in the clubhouse. And that's important on our team, really important.
Hey, something I was thinking about, I've heard you guys mention that, you know, you'd like to get J.P. Crawford off his feet a little bit. I know he's been working at Driveline this offseason and sort of changing some of his prep for the year, which is awesome. If you're using Dylan Moore a little bit more at shortstop, I would think, especially against, you know, left-handed hitting, what does that mean at second base? Because in theory, there's sort of a platoon righty-lefty at second base. Does that mean we might see some Dylan Moore, Sam Haggerty middle infields? How does that play out?
I think that's a very possible, you know, outcome. And there's also the potential of playing Colton Wong versus the lefties because the defensive advantage is so great. And he will otherwise be getting some off days versus the tough lefties when Demo's stepping in. So, you know, it's probably not a hard and fast Haggerty and Moore versus lefties on the day that you know, JP's off, but that's, I think you'll see that combination more than a couple of times along the way. But I think the more likely outcome is that on some of those occasions where we're just taking JP off his feet, Colton will play second base, Demo will play shortstop, and we'll do it based on what we think the quality of the matchup is with Colton and that lefty.
Hey, last question for you, and we'll let you run here, Jerry. We talked about this last week with Goldie and the number of position players that cracked the top 10. I think you had five of them on the top 10 list around baseball, and we were a little taken that Luis Castillo was not one of the top 10 starting pitchers. Did that surprise you a little bit, or is that back to kind of what you said about maybe being in Miami and Cincinnati and markets where he was not exposed as much?
You know, I think it's more of the latter, and he wasn't, you know, a big name on the national stage prior to the second half of last year, despite pitching in a couple All-Star games, having the kind of stuff that you see pour out of his hand, and despite the fact that if you look at the projections for 2023, he lands right in that zone, and if you look at the performance over the last 3 years, I think he's ninth or tenth, and starting pitcher war. So those are his people. And, you know, our job as a team is to make sure that he gets enough exposure on the national stage that the rest of the baseball world is aware of how good Luis is, because he has been that good over the course of the last couple of years. He projects to be that good moving forward. And we saw it with our own eyes, but, you know, subjective lists are what they are. If he wasn't in the top 10, my guess he was 10 and a half. He's in that conversation.
Those are his people.
Well, and if he does it again this year, he'll be playing in an All-Star game at home. How cool will that be? It was kind of fun seeing the guy in from Major League Baseball yesterday talking about what that's going to look like and the week leading up to the All-Star game here. I will admit I hadn't been thinking about it a lot, but once he was there, I was like, oh, you know what? That's going to be pretty awesome. Mm-hmm. And then even having the draft here at home is going to be fun as well.
You know, you think about it and all the good things that are happening for the Mariners right now, even just Seattle sports in general, but, you know, all the good things that are happening for the Mariners and going into this season. Yesterday I was asked a question, and heavens knows there was a ton of questions yesterday, but one of the questions we were asked was, are you disturbed by the fact that you look at the top 100 prospect list and you only have three? I said, whoa, three's good. You know, I can remember years where we were at zero. So three's good. It's an above average number with a team that is still one of the youngest. I think the youngest in our division. We are still, you know, sub 29 years old on our average age. We're coming off of consecutive 91 seasons and a playoff berth a year ago. We got three first round draft picks and multiple things to be excited about headed into this draft. We just signed what I think is one of the premier young players in the international space. We've got the All-Star game in July. We've got the winter classic coming in January. It's a good time to be here.
That's all true, but can we get a suspension for Tyler Myers for a filthy, dirty hit on Matty Beniers last week?
Jeez.
Yeah, I was there. I could go on for quite some time about that. I was pissed when it happened. I'm even more aggravated today.
As somebody who grew up a Rangers fan, I'm surprised you weren't okay with what Tyler Myers did.
Yeah, well, we got to go. We're up against a break.
You flashbacks. I'll be all right.
Jerry, thank you. Great stuff. Thank you for yesterday and for today. We really are getting pumped for this. Just a couple weeks away from spring training. We'll talk to you next week.
All right,
there you go. There's Jerry DePoto. I mean, he grew up a Rangers fan. I'm sorry. I mean, there's some things in this world that are just unacceptable, and obviously that's one of them. So, nice guy, good GM, president, etc. Let's not overlook the fact that he grew up as a New York Rangers fan.
He had a lot left in the tank, by the way.
Yeah, he did.
If you're curious, if maybe we catch him, okay. No, he can go and go and go and go.
So we're going to answer a few questions. You want to answer the question jerk now, or do you want to hold it? Now we can do it now. We'll do it at 9, coming up here in just 5 minutes, and then at 9:30 we'll come back to some of what we heard from Jerry DePoto before ranked. A different kind of rank today at 9:45. Yes, Maura, you're going to be very excited about this. Don't go anywhere. It's Brock and Salk on CL Sports on 710.